Okay. When you think about Paul and perseverance, what do you think about? What comes to mind? In the life of Paul, what was it about perseverance that stands out? His time in prison. How many times did Paul go to prison? If you start trying to count them up, we don't know all of them. Look in 2 Corinthians chapter 11. I'm sure this is a passage that may come to mind as you think about the endurance of Paul and what he persevered. And we're not going to dwell on this passage tonight. We could, and I thought about doing that, just looking at this passage. But look in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and go down to verse 23, where Paul begins to list some of the things that he had endured as a Christian. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 23, Paul says, "Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool, I am more." And here he begins this list. "In labors more abundant, in stripes, having been beaten, having been whipped," that's the kind of stripes he's talking about, "in stripes above measure," can't even count them, "in prisons more frequently." He had not even been to Rome yet. He writes about being in prisons before he's ever in prison in Rome, and we know he was in prison in Rome on two separate occasions. "In deaths," in danger of death, the end of verse 23, "often. From the Jews, 5 times, I received 40 stripes minus one." 5 times, Paul, at the writing of this letter, had been beaten with 39 stripes, 39 lashes. 3 times, I was beaten with rods, no doubt talking about what the Romans had done to him. How many times did the Romans whip you? The Jews stopped at 39 because by their law it was 40, and so they took one off in case somebody miscounted. What about the Romans? What was their limit?
No limit. When they got tired.
They didn't have a limit. 3 times he was beaten with rods at the writing of this letter. Do you suppose it ever happened again after this letter? "Once I was stoned." Think about that. You say, "Oh, big deal, it's only one time." What was the intent when somebody was stoned? To kill him. Where are we in verse 25? 3 times I was shipwrecked. "A night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeys often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness, in toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger, in thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Besides the other things, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches." When you think about Paul, what does the word perseverance mean? He went through all of that. Why did he list that for us? For a pity party? Was he saying, "All right, here's what I've gone through. What'd you do?" Is he comparing wounds? "Here's what I went through. Now, tell me what you've gone through." When Paul writes these things, is he hiding anything from Christians that they may or will go through the very same thing? Did he talk to Christians about the fact that they would be persecuted as well? What did Paul do when he was mistreated? What does it mean to persevere? Keep on going. It has the idea of endurance, that you bear up under it and you take it. But sometimes you think about endurance, and it's the wrong definition for the Bible word for endure, because the Bible word for endure does not mean this. Sometimes we think about endurance and we think, all right, I'll just bear up under it and I'll wait for it to stop. You ever been in a position where you were doing that? Where you were just, all right, I'll just wait for another minute and maybe it'll go away. That's not endurance the way the Bible defines endurance. The Bible defines endurance as perseverance, that yes, I bear up under it and I take it, but at the same time, I keep going. I keep moving. It's not stopping me. I'm not standing still. When Paul was in prison, did that stop him? Did that slow him down? You say, well, you know, that's probably a good thing. I needed to get a little rest, so maybe I'll just, I'll take a little while here and take a siesta, and when I get out of here, then I'll go back to work. Or was it business as usual? Keep right on going. Come back to the question I asked. When you think about Paul and perseverance, what do you think about? What comes to mind? If you had to pick a passage in the Bible, besides 2 Corinthians 11, you can't have that one. We just took it away. If you had to think of a passage in the Bible that talks about Paul and perseverance, what would you think about? Look, I press on. What'd you say? Okay. Go to the book of Philippians. Both of those are in the book of Philippians. Look in Philippians chapter 1. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 21. What did Paul say? For to me to live is Christ. Here's my life. And if I continue to live, my life is going to be summed up in one word, Christ. Everything about me is going to be, for me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Pearl says she thinks about Paul, all she can think about is his focus on Christ. That's what Paul just said, isn't it? Where was he when he wrote the book of Philippians? Sitting in a Roman prison cell. For me to live, even in a Roman prison cell, is Christ. Now go over to chapter 3. This is where the one that Joe mentioned is over in Philippians chapter 3. Drop down to, look at verse 13. Brethren, I do not count myself too apprehended, but one thing I do, forgetting those things that are behind and reaching forward to those things which are ahead. What is the one thing that he does in verse 14? I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. Is that perseverance? What's he saying in verse 13? I don't care what's happened to me in the past. Is that going to stop me? Forgetting those things that are behind and reaching forward to those things that are ahead. He's focused on his target. He's focused on his goal. And he says, I am pressing on to that victory. What other passages come to mind? Philippians 4:11. What did Paul say that he had learned in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 11? He had learned a lot of lessons, hadn't he? Philippians chapter 4 and verse 11, he says, I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. Had he been in a lot of different states? I have learned in verse 12 both to be full and to be hungry, to abound and to suffer need. How was he able to do all of that? Where did he gain the strength? I'm leading you to the next verse. Where did he gain the strength to endure and to persevere? I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Do you believe that? Yeah. How much do you believe that? If you were to endure 10% of what Paul endured, that'd be a lot to endure. Would you have the same heart to say, for me to live is Christ? I press on toward the goal. I can do all things through Christ. What other passages come to mind? What other thoughts in the writings of Paul come to mind when you think about Paul and perseverance? If somebody is going to persevere, how long do they need to persevere? Say it again, John. till the end. If you persevere for a while and then you stop, is perseverance characteristic of you? Well, no, not if you've stopped. Go to 2 Timothy chapter 4. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, John, he's at the end. Book of 2 Timothy is the last book that we have from the pen of Paul. This is the second time. He wrote the book of Philippians the first time he was in a Roman prison cell. According to historical records, he was able to be released for a period of time, perhaps somewhere around 4 to 5 years, until he was again taken into Roman captivity, again put in a Roman prison cell. And according to historical records, at some point put to death by Nero. When he writes 2 Timothy, he knows that his end is near. Look at what he says in verse 6. 2 Timothy chapter 4 in verse 6. He says, I am already. This isn't something that's about ready to happen. He said, this process has already started. He says, I am already being what? Poured out as a drink offering. Jewish imagery from the Old Testament, where they would take that wine before the burnt offering and they would pour that wine out, empty the wine out before the sacrifice was made. What's Paul saying? It's here. I'm being poured out. The sacrifice is about ready to be made. What does he say in the rest of that verse? The time of what? Of my departure has come. The time of my departure is at hand. The word departure there is a word that they used. It was a nautical term that they used where they would untie a ship from the dock and let the ship go. The time of my departure is at hand. What happens to the soul when the body dies? It departs. The body dies, but the soul doesn't. The time of my departure. What does that say? I'm going somewhere. Are you going to the grave? No, that's not. He's not going to the grave. The time of my leaving, the time for me to unloose the rope from the dock and to leave, for me to live as Christ, to die, to depart, is gain. He says, that time, it's here. Paul had endured so much, but he had persevered. And if we're going to persevere, then we need to reach the end. Paul was at the end. We need to reach the end of our life and to be able to say what Paul says in verse 7. Now, before we do that, I want you to listen to what I said again before we look at verse 7. In order for us to persevere like Paul, then we need to be able to say at the end of our life what Paul was able to say in verse 7. I've said that two times now. I'm going to say it one more time because I'm going to ask you a question. If we are going to persevere like Paul, then we need to be able to say what Paul said at the end of our life. We need to be able to say what he said in verse 7. Now I've got a question for you. When is the end of your life going to come? All of a sudden you're speechless. When is the end of your life going to come? You don't know. So is verse 7 something you can say, well, you know, I can probably say this in about 20 years, but I can't say it tonight. Well, what if your life comes to an end tonight? Do you need to be able to say what Paul said in verse 7? Because if we can't say what Paul said in verse 7, then we can't say what Paul said in verse 8. What did Paul say in verse 8? There is laid up for me a crown of righteousness. If we can't say what Paul said in verse 8, if we can't say at the end of our life what Paul said in verse 7. So how can we say what Paul said in verse 7? We've got to learn to persevere. We've got to learn that we're going to put the Lord first in all that we do. And we don't have a lot of time to develop this, but I want us to see these three things in chapter 4 and verse 7. Because true perseverance is going to be and must be able to say at the end of our life, whether that's tonight, whether that's tomorrow night, or whether that's 20 years from now. True perseverance is a heart that can say, I have fought the good fight. Can you say that? Paul could say that. Can you say that? What is the good fight? What is that? What's the good fight? Is that a strange statement for Christianity? The good fight. That's one is talking about fighting. That's strange. We're Christians. We're not supposed to fight. And is calling this fight good. Have you ever had a fight in your house that was good?
No.
Be careful how you answer that. No. And perhaps depending on what side of the fight you were on, maybe it was good. I don't know. The word fight is used for Christians, and it is modified by the word good. Are Christians involved in a fight? What kind of fight? Earthly fight or spiritual fight? Carnal or spiritual? Are you not taking your machine guns out on your neighbors? That's not the kind of fight we're talking about, is it?
No.
All right.
That's a
battle. We're not asking for confessions here, by the way. So if you do, that's your deal. Are we involved in a warfare?
Yes.
Look in you're in 2 Timothy. Back up to 1 Timothy for just a second. Look in 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 18. Remember what Paul says in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 7. I have fought the good fight. Fighting the good fight. Look at the end of 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 18. And it's not the word fight here. It's a different word. What does he say at the end of verse 18? 1 Timothy chapter 1. To, depending on what translation you have, so the New King James says, to wage the good warfare. Anybody got a translation that says, to war the good warfare? It uses the word war as a verb. So 2 Timothy talks about fighting the good fight. 1 Timothy 1 and verse 18, warring the good warfare. Go to chapter 6, 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 12. Is this just something just for Paul, or is this for others too? Look in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 12. What does he tell Timothy? Fight the good fight of faith. So when this fight is talked about, it's called good. When this warfare is talked about in chapter 1 and verse 18, it's called a good warfare. What kind of fight are we involved in that's good? What are we fighting against? The devil? What are we fighting against? Sin? What are we fighting against? Principalities and powers, the rulers of the darkness of this age? What are we fighting against? Of this world. What are we fighting against? What? Right now? You all are giving me some generalities now. Right now, as Christians, what are you fighting against?
Against ourselves.
Okay, we might be fighting against ourselves. What? Right now, today, what are you fighting against?
Sin.
What kind of sin?
Lust.
Lust of the flesh. Lust of the eyes.
Jealousy.
Pride of life. Are we fighting against these, or are we not fighting against these things? Abortion. Are we fighting against immorality in this nation? Is this a good fight? Why is it good? What's this deal about it being called good? What makes it good? because of who we are fighting for. It's not good because I'm doing it. It's good because I am defending the cause of Christ. Anything better than that? As a Christian, can I stand to be a pacifist as a Christian? I'm not talking about going to war in Iraq. I'm talking about going to war in your own neighborhood as a Christian. Can you stand by and do nothing? What does Ephesians chapter 6 tell us to do? Put on the... How much of the armor of God? All of it. The whole armor of God. Why? Because we're engaged in a fight, in a warfare that God calls good. Now, there's another word that's used there, and it's the word the. What does that mean? There's only one fight you can be involved in that's got any meaning to it at all. And it's the good fight that he said to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 12, it's the good fight of faith. This isn't about us. It's not some personal vendetta that we're on. It's not some political view that I have. It is about the cause of Christ. If I want to say at the end that I have persevered for God, one thing that I've got to be able to say is, I have fought the good fight. Brethren, are we fighting? Or are we, Pearl says, just playing around? Are we engaged as Christians? Or are we just becoming spectators? Now look at what Paul says. I have fought. Paul looks back at his life. At one time, could Paul say, I have fought against the good fight? At one time in his life, could he have said that? I have fought against the... Yeah, one time he was fighting against the good fight. But then when he got on the right side, he started fighting the good fight himself. And when he got to the end of his life, he was able to look back and he was able to characterize his entire life. Not just a part here and maybe one more over there, but he was able to look back at his whole life and to say, I have fought. I have been engaged in this battle. You look at the Greek words that are on the screen for fight and fought. And it's the words that we get agonize and agony from. This could literally be translated, I have agonized the good agony. That's what the words are. Paul, what were you doing? I was struggling the great struggle. What is that? That's for the cause of Christ. I was agonizing. I was struggling. I was fighting. Can we say that? If we're going to persevere, if we are going to be able to say in verse 8, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, what do we have to be able to say in verse 7? At the end of my life, whenever that comes, I've got to be able to state with confidence, Lord, there was a fight for righteousness. And I was engaged. I was involved. I was a part of it. Do we need Christians today to stand up for righteousness? Yeah. If Christians are not going to fight the good fight, who is? If Christians are not going to stand for righteousness, who is? Brethren, we need to get engaged in the fight. It's interesting, the imagery that God uses here. It's not just warfare. What's the second statement that Paul makes in verse 7? It's not just warfare. He says, I have finished the course. So he apparently shifts from a warfare metaphor, and he now comes to another metaphor that Paul used a lot in his writings to talk about the Christian life. And this is where he talks about the Christian life being a race. He used that a lot. He used that in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. He uses it in 2 Timothy. If you back up two chapters, he uses it in 2 Timothy chapter 2 about verse 5. How is the Christian life like a race? What is that? You're always striving for the goal. Isn't that what he said in Philippians 3 and verse 14? I press towards the goal. If you're involved in a race, where is your aim? Where are your sights set? Your sights ought to be set on the finish line. Isn't that true? They need to be. You need to know where that finish line is. You need to know how to get to the finish line. Why else is the Christian life characterized as a race? Got to be something else. Okay. The prize that we're looking for is only at the end. What did Paul say? There is laid up for me the crown. That crown that's in verse 8 is the victor's wreath that was given out at the Olympic Games. It was for the one who won. He says, that's the victor's crown that's laid up for me. Well, Paul, when are you going to get that? Oh, I got to get to the finish line to get it. Why else is the Christian life like a race? Takes preparation. Takes endurance. Over in Hebrews chapter 12, when the Bible talks about the race over there, did it say that there are some things that we need to remove from ourselves in order to engage in this race? Are there some sins that so easily beset us? Are there some weights that weigh us down that we've got to remove so that we can be involved in this race? We need to do that? How difficult is it to run the Christian race when you've got your sins weighing you down? It's pretty tough. You look at the Olympic runners, and I hate to even ask this question, how much are they wearing? They're not carrying any extra pounds, are they? Not on purpose, okay? They're as light as they can be. Why? Because the more weight they're going to be carrying, the harder it is going to be to run. The Christian life is like a race. Is it like a sprint, or is it like a marathon? Why is it like a marathon? Because it goes on and on and it keeps going. Is it like a half marathon? I mean, those aren't as bad as a marathon, right? That's what I've heard. I don't know. I can't even think about a 32nd of a marathon. I mean, that just scares me. Just the 32nd of a marathon. Christian race, Christian life is like a marathon. You got bridges and valleys. You know, when you're in Florida, you don't think about that. I don't know if Rachel Byerly did some running up at Freed, just I don't know, for pleasure. I still don't understand running for pleasure. Those two thoughts, just the brain doesn't get it for me. But when you run up in Tennessee, it's a little bit different than running in flat Florida. You get to Tennessee and it's, oh wow, these roads move up and down. What's wrong with that? Their Christian life is like that, isn't it? It moves up and down. It's really easy. It's really easy sometimes to run the Christian life, and then sometimes it's pretty tough, isn't it? But when you're running the Christian race, if you're going to persevere, what does it mean? It means you keep on trucking. Sometimes you can run pretty fast when it's easy. But sometimes you just want to stop and rest. Don't go any further. What do you got to do as a Christian? No matter how heavy that burden becomes, you keep moving forward. So what does Paul say here in verse 7? Fought the good fight. I have finished the course. Go over to Acts chapter 20 for just a second. Look at Acts chapter 20 where Paul uses this same terminology. Over in Acts chapter 20, when he's talking to the Ephesian elders. And I want you to see what he says here. How is it? Remember what he says. At the end of his life, he says, I have finished the course. Now come to Acts chapter 20 and verse 24. Look at what he says. None of these things move me. None of the things that had happened to him. None of the tribulations, none of the persecutions changed him, moved him. Nor do I count my life dear to myself. What does that mean? I do not count my life dear to myself. What does that, in a positive statement, in a simple statement, what does that mean? Selfless? Is he willing to die? Willing to give his life? Ready to give his life? I don't count my own life as of any value to me. It's not dear to me. Now, why? Why did he adopt the philosophy of life that said, it's not about me, it's not about my life, it's about serving God? Why did he adopt that? Look at what he says in verse 24. So that I may do what? Finish my race. And not just finish my race, but finish my race with joy. So the Christian life, even when I remove all of the weights and all of the things that encumber me as a Christian, and even when I, as the kids say, I can't do what everybody else is doing because I'm a Christian. Is that the mentality that kids have? Well, I can't go and do what everybody else is doing because my parents are Christians and they won't let me. Well, what if you decide you don't want to do those things? What if you decide I'm going to put all of those things off? I'm going to take all of these sins and all of these desires and all of these passions and all of these lusts and all of these temptations, I'm going to put them away. And when I put them away, it will enable me to finish my course and not do it with drudgery, not do it with, man, that Christian life was horrible. Man, I didn't get to do this and I didn't get to do that and I was just miserable all the time. No. To be able to finish your course, be able to do it with joy. Paul was when he's in Acts chapter 20, he's about 10 years. Let's say 10 years. I think it's about right at about 10 years. In Acts 20, 10 years before he dies. In Acts 20, he's 10 years before he writes 2 Timothy chapter 4. He's got 10 years left to live, and what does he say? I want to finish my course. How am I going to do that? I'm getting myself out of the way. So that when he gets to the end of the life, he can say, that's what I've done. I haven't just stayed on the course. I have finished it. I have reached the end. Can we say what Paul said in verse 7? As we think about our own lives that get so filled up with so many things, do we want to be able to say at the end of our life, whenever that day comes, is Paul confident in verse 8? Is there absolute assurance in verse 8? Yeah. He doesn't say there might be a crown of righteousness waiting for me. He said it's there and it's there right now. There is laid up. Can you say that tonight? Yeah. Can you say, do you have that confidence and assurance? There is a crown of righteousness. And the only way we can have that confidence is if we're able to say, God, I have been fighting the good fight. I have finished the course, and I have kept the faith. There's three targets for us in order that we might reach the end with confidence, persevering all the way, not allowing the devil and his tactics to get us off course. I think I have held you until the moment I was supposed to hold you. Not that that was the purpose of this class, but I believe that there are cookies. No. I heard that there are not only cookies tonight. I heard, don't hold me to this, I heard that there is ice cream. Whoa. Hold, just Let that settle for a second. So I believe you're supposed to let the kids eat first. Sorry. But if the kids leave anything, you can go enjoy some cookies and ice cream, and we'll see you Sunday morning.